Hello, and welcome to The Big Snore. In each episode, I will read a passage from a book, an article, a magazine that runs about 15 to 20 minutes. You can choose to listen to this as a bedtime story or just a story at any time of the day. Today, the passage I'm reading is from Mike Gale's novel, All the Lonely People. It was Saturday afternoon, and Hubert was draped in an old bedsheet and perched on a rickety dining chair. The dingy Stockwell bedsit belonged to Elwood, a Trinidadian friend of Gus's who, though he worked in a bakery near King's Cross, styled West Indian hair in his spare time. While only self-taught, Elwood was good at what he did and was able to recreate all the latest styles coming from America and back home, which was why Hubert had sought him out. "So," said Elwood, "what you want from me today?" Fumbling under the bedsheet, Hubert reached into his jacket, pulled out a picture torn from the pages of a movie magazine, and handed it to Elwood. "Me want to look like this." Examining the image of a smiling Nat King Cole, Elwood frowned. "You do know that to get this look, you're going to have to straighten your hair?" Hubert nodded. "It's not a problem." "Are you sure?" asked Elwood. He reached under his bed and took out a jar of congoline from a box and showed it to Hubert. "You know this is mighty powerful stuff. I've seen fellows lose chunks of their hair from this after only using it once." Hubert swallowed hard. Was the benefit of looking like Nat King Cole worth the risk of losing some of his hair? He decided it was. "Do what you have to do." "Fine," replied Elwood, and he glanced from the picture of Nat King Cole to the comb in his hand. "Well, friend, this isn't a magic wand, and I'm no magician, but if you want to look like Mr. Smooth right there, then I'll give it my best shot." Hubert had never relaxed his hair before, preferring to wear it greased and combed back like most young West Indian men. But this coming week was important, perhaps the most vital of his life, and he decided he needed to make a good impression, because this was going to be the week that he asked out Joyce Pierce. Until the day of his fight with Vince, all of Hubert's encounters with the English had been a mixed bag of hostility, curiosity, and fear. But then he'd met Joyce, and she'd had treated him as if he was just another person, and it had been an oddly refreshing experience. Ever since, much to Hubert's surprise, he had found himself doing a lot of thinking about Joyce Pierce. Soon, thinking about Joyce became a pastime so agreeable that he became oblivious to the cold stares and murmurings of Vince's now leaderless crew. In fact, soon Hubert began to quantify how good or bad a day was simply by the quality and quantity of interactions he had with Joyce. A glimpse of her in the service lift was wonderful, but a chat as he delivered a bolt of imported Chinese silk to the third floor could make his entire day. In spite of the hideous food it served, Hubert had begun frequenting the staff canteen again, in the hope of standing in line next to Joyce or sitting at a table opposite the one he shared with the girls from the haberdashery. When exactly Hubert's thoughts shifted from distant admiration to drawing up a plan of action was a mystery even he couldn't fathom. But in a short space of time, he went from believing that there was no way a girl like Joyce would go out with him to becoming convinced that if he just said the right thing in the right way and looked handsome and debonair while doing it, he might have a chance. And it was with this end in mind that Hubert had sought out Elwood. The congoline burned his scalp like hell while he was waiting for it to take effect, but then he saw the finished result. Hubert forgot all about the pain in an instant. Okay, so he didn't exactly resemble Nat King Cole, or even Nat King Cole's slightly less attractive brother, but he was in no doubt that with his freshly straightened hair sculpted into a low quiff, there was an air of sophistication about him. His new hairstyle showed off the sharpness of his cheekbones to best effect, and his freshly trimmed mustache perfectly complemented the fullness of his lips. Joyce Pierce wouldn't be able to resist him. Arriving at work on Monday morning, the first thing Hubert did after donning his warehouse coat was to check his reflection in the cracked mirror above the sink in the staff toilets. Still pleased with his new look, he doused himself liberally in his favorite cologne before clocking in. Making his way to the loading bay, Hubert discovered Mr. Coulthard talking to three much-needed new recruits to the warehouse staff. Of the three, two were English, and Mr. Coulthard assigned Hubert the task of showing the third, a young West Indian lad, the ropes. The boy was called Kenneth, a spindly, clueless-looking fellow who was so fresh off the boat, Hubert could practically smell the sea on him. He was 18, but seemed more like 8, and much to Hubert's frustration, could barely hold one instruction in his head without it being pushed straight out by another. The other two didn't seem much better, and when the deliveries arrived, the old hands like Hubert had to work twice as hard to undo all the mistakes they were making. By midday, Hubert was exhausted, dripping with sweat, his new hair awry, and the smell of his cologne long since faded. This was, of course, the exact moment as an exasperated Mr. Coulthard sent him up to the haberdashery department to sort out a problem with an order. All the way up in the service lift, Hubert hoped and prayed that it wouldn't be Joyce waiting for him on the other side of the doors. Hubert stepped out of the lift. "Hello, you," said Joyce. "Long time no see. The cut's healed nicely." "Yes, it has, thank you." He ran a hand casually through his hair in a desperate bid to subtly tidy it up, and immediately regretted it, covered as it now was in a thin, greasy sheen of pomade. Hubert thought briefly of Nat King Cole and wondered whether this sort of thing ever happened to him. "I like your hair," said Joyce, "very dashing." Hubert was overjoyed. Maybe this was the right moment to ask her out after all. "Me glad you like it." "Anyway," said Joyce after a long pause, "much as I'd like to, I can't spend all day gabbing with you. Critchlow's in a foul mood, as it is, and if she clocks that I'm not on the shop floor, there'll be hell to pay." She held out an order form for Hubert to see. "I don't know what's been going on down there this morning, but what we've had delivered up here twice today bears no resemblance to what's on this form." Hubert examined the piece of paper, but such was his focus on what he was about to say next that he couldn't see a single word. This was it. This was his moment. It was now or never. He cleared his throat. His mouth was suddenly dry. Joyce, well, me need to ask you something. About the order? About, for a moment, he thought he might pass out with the anxiety of it all. About whether you might be free to go out on Saturday night? There was a long silence. Hubert couldn't read Joyce's expression. He cleared his throat again and decided to clarify his intentions in case she was confused. "Me mean with me. Would you like to go to the pictures with me on Saturday night?" "Oh," said Joyce. Hubert felt his heart sink. "I'm really flattered, Hubert, really I am, but..." Hubert tried his best to salvage what remained of his dignity. "You don't have to say anything. Me understand completely." "No, Hubert, you don't. It's not like that. It's..." The door behind them creaked open, and a short, plump girl in a Hamilton's uniform poked her head around it. "Whatever you're doing, you'd best do it quick. Critchell is on the warpath." Hubert folded the order in half then, without waiting, stepped back into the lift, and pulled the door closed. This was the end for him and Hamilton's, Hubert decided. He would have to find himself a job elsewhere. Later that day, Hubert returned to the bedsit in Brixton that Gus had helped him find a few weeks ago. Despite its damp walls, peeling wallpaper, and drafty windows, it wasn't the worst lodgings he'd seen. And in addition, it had all the essentials: a battered armchair next to a tiny coal fire, a gas ring to cook on, a single bed with a lumpy horsehair mattress. It was, however, miles away from the comforts of the home he missed so terribly. Taking out a sheet of light blue airmail paper and a stub of pencil from a battered suitcase under the bed, Hubert grabbed the Bible his mother had packed for him. Using it to rest his paper on, he sat down in the armchair and began to write. Before leaving Jamaica, Hubert had promised his mother that he would try to write at least once a week. To start with, his letters had been full of energy and optimism, describing in vivid details the sights and sounds of London, the place they'd all imagined for so long. He told her about the smoke coming from all the chimneys, a sight you'd never see back home, and of his delight in seeing snow for the first time, which he and Gus had played in for hours like children, throwing snowballs and making snowmen. He wrote about all the grand buildings with their history and beautiful architecture, and how on his first free day in London, he had walked all the way from Brixton to Buckingham Palace to silently pay respect to the Queen on his own behalf and also that of his family in Jamaica. His mother had received all his news with delight, and her replies had been full of questions about the weather, London fashions, and of course, about whether he was looking after himself. She would sign off each letter in the same way. "I'm so proud of you, my son. May the Lord bless and keep you." Because of this, Hubert hadn't had the heart to tell her the truth that had gradually dawned on him. He was miserable, lonely, and homesick. He hadn't told her about the English families that would cross the road just to avoid walking past him, the signs in the windows of boarding houses making it clear that neither he, nor the Irish, nor people with dogs were welcome. He hadn't told her how cold it got, how in bed he struggled to get warm even when fully clothed. He hadn't told her about the dreadful food, the filthy sheets, and how hard he had to work just to keep a roof over his head. Instead, he'd kept his letters brief and cheerful. But as he sat shivering, pencil poised and thinking about how much his heart hurt, knowing that his feelings for Joyce were unrequited, for the first time ever, he felt like telling his mother the truth. In the end, Hubert didn't bother going to the labor exchange, reasoning it was a case of better the devil you know. Who knew what sort of job he might be offered next and what horrors lay in store? No, he would stick with Hamilton's, with its long hours and hard toil for the time being. He would avoid Joyce at all costs, keep his head down, steer clear of the canteen, and delegate all calls to the third floor to his reluctant protege, Kenneth. When a week and a half went by without any sight of Joyce, Hubert began to relax. While he wasn't over her, he could at least imagine a time when he might be. In the meantime, Gus had recently started dating an English girl he'd met at a dance, and this girl had told Gus she had a friend who would be perfect for Hubert. "You always look too serious these days, Smiler," he'd said. "Come out with us and have a little fun." This was an offer that Hubert had so far declined, but with the weekend looming, he started to question the wisdom of his position. Early on Wednesday morning, a call came down from the third floor for an order of several bolts of Lancashire tweed. Hubert searched for Kenneth, but he was nowhere to be seen. And when Hubert asked after him, he discovered that Kenneth had gone up to the furniture department on the fourth floor with an order some time ago and hadn't been seen since. Cursing the boy under his breath, Hubert made up the order and took the lift to the third floor himself. If it was Joyce waiting for him, he would be polite but brief, keeping conversation to a minimum. And then later, once he'd recovered from being in her presence, he would find Kenneth and box his ears. As he opened the lift doors, Hubert poked his head out, only to discover that the delivery bay was empty. Breathing a sigh of relief, he began to unload the fabric. But then, just as he hoisted the last bolt onto his shoulder, the door to the shop floor opened. It was Joyce, looking more beautiful than ever. Even from a distance, Hubert could see that she had done something different with her hair, winding it up into an elegant chignon that made her appear older and more sophisticated somehow. She gave him a smile. "I was beginning to worry that you'd left us. Whenever I pick up an order these days, it's always the young boy who gets sent up." Hubert resisted the urge to kiss his teeth as he put down the material in front of her. "You mean Kenneth? That damned boy is hopeless. He got sent up to a job on the fourth floor, and no one has seen him since." "I expect it's quite busy up there," said Joyce. "I've heard the new floor manager has been having a sales promotion, and things are all at sixes and sevens. I'm sure your man will reappear soon." Hubert held out the order form. She scribbled down her name with a flourish and handed it back to him. "It's been lovely to see you," said Joyce. "And now you've broken the streak. Hopefully you won't be such a stranger. I was beginning to think that you were avoiding me." Hubert said nothing, and instead, feeling like his face was on fire with embarrassment, he quickly turned back to the lift, but then she called out after him. He turned around, expecting her to produce a forgotten order for him, but instead she was smiling. I've got a question for you. What are you doing Saturday night? Hubert stared at her, confused. Me got no plans. Good, she replied. In that case, you're taking me to the 5 o'clock showing of South Pacific at the Regal in Blackfriars. Hubert stood frozen to the spot, speechless. A wry smile played on Joyce's lips. What? You haven't seen it already, have you? Even if he had 20 times, he would gladly see it 20 times more if it meant going with her. No, me haven't seen it. Good, said Joyce. Then I'll meet you outside the Regal at 4:30 so we can chat before the film. For the rest of the day, Hubert couldn't stop grinning. He grinned in the lift on the way back down to the warehouse. He grinned as he passed Mr. Coulthard yelling at the new lads. And he grinned all the more later when Kenneth told him a very odd story about being sent on a wild goose chase to the fourth floor by a girl from haberdashery. That was a passage from Mike Gale's novel, All the Lonely People. You've been listening to The Big Snore. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Until next time.